Welcome to On Mic with Jordan Rich, a chance to meet up with those who speak to us. The power and grace and beauty of the human voice. And it's a look behind the scenes at the very successful people in the field of voiceover and presentation. Well, today's guest is another personal friend and idol for me, Ron Della Chiesa. Born in Quincy, Massachusetts, Ron has become a local radio institution, hosting for so many years a groundbreaking show on WGBH called Music America, where he featured the best of the American songbook of Broadway and his beloved jazz. For decades, he's been the voice of the Boston Symphony Orchestra, both at Symphony Hall and at the BSO Summer Home in Tanglewood in the Berkshires. Ron also hosts a very popular show all about Frank Sinatra, Old Blue Eyes, and he's done countless television and radio appearances, thousands of narrations, promos, and commercials, and just completed his memoir. It's a terrific book that we'll talk about a bit later. And here's a taste of Ron in the studio doing a little work for the BSO.
This February, conductor Andras Nelson leads the Boston Symphony Orchestra in unforgettable concerts. February 2nd through the 7th.
Conductor Andras Nelson's and the Boston Symphony Orchestra open the 2017 Tanglewood season Friday, July 7th with a performance of Mahler's Symphony.
Come to Tanglewood in the beautiful Berkshires with a season of spectacular music and performances. Join conductor Andras Nelson's leading the BSO, Keith Lockhart and John Williams with the Boston Pops, and superstars James Taylor, Sting, John Mellencamp, and Diana Ross. And Tanglewood presents Summer Sundays, offering a wide range of...
So here we are, Ron Della Chiesa in my studio. That's always a treat. We have so much fun outside of the studio, but here we have two microphones, so let's play. How are you, Ron?
I'm fine. Great to see you, John. Yeah. You know, we have so much fun. We do, indeed, attending so many events together with my wife, Joyce. And you're a beautiful Roberta.
That's right. And I met you, 35 years ago as a fan. I was a fan of Music America, and getting a chance to meet you and sort of hang out with you a little bit was such a thrill. And over the years, you've done so much in the industry, and you're still as busy as ever.
Well, I feel blessed. You know, I carved out this niche for myself, and it had a lot to do with my love for jazz, the Great American Songbook, film, Broadway, opera, classical music. And I was able to maintain that through many, many years, right up until the present time. Thankfully, I'm now into my 26th year as the voice of the Boston Symphony and the Boston Pops broadcast. So I feel very, very blessed.
And that's a very unique voiceover opportunity, because we look at the historical figures who have done it. Milton Cross, certainly William Pierce in the Boston area was a legendary voice, and you've followed along in their footsteps.
Well, you know, you mentioned Milton Cross. Of course, he was the voice of the Metropolitan Opera for 55 years. Mm. I think he only missed one broadcast when he lost his wife. But he was one of my idols because I grew up at home in Quincy, Massachusetts. My mother and father always had the opera on Saturday afternoon. Mm. And Milton's voice would, Texaco presents the Metropolitan Opera. Good afternoon, opera lovers from coast to coast and in Canada. This is Milton Cross. From the broadcast booth at the Metropolitan Opera House in New York City, our opera today is Verdi's Aida. In the role of Radames, we'll hear Jordan Rich.
Oh, I'm honored. You know what I love about you, and you and I have had so much fun over the years just goofing. You have an amazing ear for voice, not only identifying singers and great vocalists, but hearing voices and then mimicking them. You've been a great mimic, as I sort of am a sort of an amateur mimic myself. Is that important to what you do? Has that helped you?
Yeah, I would say so. And sometimes when I'm asked to do a certain accent or Sid Caesar was one of my idols. You know, when he could do the Italian movies, he could do a German U-boat commander and all of that stuff. Yeah, I think that, you know, it adds to the versatility of what you can do with your voice. And of course, the voice is where it's all happening right here.
It's the voice that's connected to the heart and the brain. And we were talking off air, Ron, about the styles that you can employ, because when you're doing jazz, that's one style. When you're doing classical, when you're announcing in front of a huge symphony crowd, I mean, all of these are different styles of voice, aren't they?
Yeah, and a lot of it has to do with loving the music and feeling the music go through you. I have a great respect for opera singers and the way they use their voice, because unlike us with a microphone, most opera houses, you just sing unamplified.
Exactly.
You have to learn how to project your voice in an opera house. In the case of the Met, seats some 4,500 people over the orchestra. So they're trained in a different way, you know?
Indeed. But when you're doing something very serene and quiet and mournful or respectful, whatever it is, that's not just your voice. That's your emotion that's in play.
I try to imagine my voice as being one of the instruments in the orchestra.
Ah.
Cello. Cello, they say, is the closest to the human voice, the sound of the cello.
Hmm.
And opera singers often have told me that, too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, opera singers, it's interesting. When they are trained, no two vocal teachers agree on how to do it. To push up to get the sound out, you know? And that's why so many opera singers keep changing teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there's a vocal crisis and they have to go to another teacher and find out exactly what's wrong. I've talked to many great, great singers, Pavarotti, Domingo, Eileen Farrell, Ben Heppner, you know, and it's all about vocal technique and developing that technique.
Mm-hmm. Well, the same thing with you as an announcer, you do commercials, you do narrations, but you also do public announcements. Your voice has, I think, gotten better over the years, has matured, and it's richer, it's cleaner. I mean, what do you do to keep your voice in shape?
Well, I like to walk a lot, and I walk with headsets, and I usually walk to Count Basie. I walk to Pavarotti.
Wearing
I
your
walk
silk
to
stockings,
Wagner. Yeah,
no doubt.
I mean, and I'll hum along as I'm walking, you know, if I know the tune.
Mm.
And that just keeps it refreshing, you know, to do something like that. And in a way, you know, I'm kind of floating on air as I'm walking, but I'm using my voice and humming along with the music.
When you did Music America, which was a program that people just loved, and you had still have a huge fan base on PBS in Boston, when you did that show, we could hear it. We could hear the enthusiasm for certain things that you loved, that you brought to the audience. And very few disc jockeys, and I call myself a disc jockey too, had that opportunity to sort of pick their own music and present their own favorites and then sell them to the audience and share them.
Well, I was blessed with getting to know this music from an early age when I started hanging out at jazz clubs in Boston. George Wein's Storyville was around, Freddie Taylor's Jazz Workshop. And of course, in Symphony Hall, I could hear the Boston Pops and Fiedler and then John Williams and now Keith Lockhart and then the great conductors of the Boston Symphony we had, you know, from Charles Munch to Leinsdorf to James Levine. And now, of course, we have Andras Nelsons, who's taking the orchestra way up into a different level.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing it at the best I've ever heard them. So I got to know the music that way. And then I got to be able to present my love for the music on the radio. So I felt this very intimate connection with what I was doing.
You also had the opportunity to meet, as you said, and get to know and befriend and have on as guests some of the leading music stars in the world. I mean, just throw a few names at us. Who are some of the people who graced your studios?
Well, Luciano Pavarotti, the great Dizzy Gillespie, Peggy Lee, Eileen Farrell,
Mel Torme.
Mel Torme,
of course,
who hated being called the Velvet Fog.
Yes,
he did not like that.
I know.
I had, Buddy Rich.
All right, let me ask you about then Buddy Rich and Pavarotti, because Buddy Rich had a notorious reputation as being a difficult guy and all that kind of stuff. But something tells me you got along with him, did you?
Yeah, I found him to be one of the nicest guys I've ever met, you know, and Stan Getz, too. They said Stan Getz could be elusive, but I think it had to do with they knew when they were with me that I knew about them, and I had a great respect and love for what they were doing. Here's something I always learned in radio, and you probably know this, Jordan. When you have a guest who's about to join you in the studio, always welcome them with their music playing in the background.
Mm. Indeed.
How can you walk out on your own thing?
Exactly. You know? Or know enough about what they're doing at the moment, and not to simply compliment them for the sake of the compliments, but to let them know that you know what they're all about and converse with them as people as opposed to simply, you know, stock figures. So let me ask you about Pavarotti. Pavarotti did that beautiful concert years ago for the movie Giorgio, and right?
Right. At the Hatch Shell. At the Hatch Shell.
But what was it like sitting down with this literal living legend? I mean,
I was so turned on by his presence, you know, because yes. having as a youngster, I told you my father played. My father loved tenors. He loved Caruso, the great golden age tenors, Tagliavini, Gili, Tito Skipa, Jussi Björling. I could go on and on. Mm. But when I heard Pavarotti sing, he was a real throwback to that era. So I was in love with his voice before I met him. I had interviewed him on the telephone because Francis Robinson, who was the assistant manager of the Metropolitan Opera, set it up for me. He was a good friend. Mm. Marvelous man. Wrote a book on Caruso. When I called Pavarotti direct, he picked up the phone. He said, "Pronto?" I said, "Signor Pavarotti, this is Ron Della Chiesa." "Oh, yes, Signor Della Chiesa. May I call you Rinaldo?" I said, "Si." So we carried on this interview in half, because my Italian's not that good. It's what we call libretto Italian.
Okay, I got you.
So there's a lot of words that are used in opera that I know. Sangue, io tremo, soccorso, all of these words. But we managed to get through it, and I started talking about the golden age of those tenors that I mentioned. And he knew every single one of them and had great respect for them. Pavarotti was a larger-than-life figure who changed the world of opera forever, as you know, with his performances, then with the three tenors, Domingo and Carreras.
Right, right. And there are others in various genres. Sinatra, of course, who you are the man when it comes to Sinatra. As far as I'm concerned, you are the holder of the Sinatra realm these days with your wonderful radio show, which has been airing for years and years. And Tony Bennett, another example of amazing voice, but more. There's so much more there. Tell me about Tony. You and he are good friends.
Good friends. I met Tony Bennett 30 years ago, maybe 32, 33 years ago when he came to Boston, and he was nowhere near the success he is now. I mean, that all happened later in his career. But we bonded right away. And his youngest child, Antonia, went to the Berklee College of Music. And Tony called us and called my wife, Joyce, and said, "Antonia is going to be coming to Boston. I know you guys will take good care of her." And we did. She just about moved in with us. And Joyce became her godmother.
Yeah.
And to this day, Tony always sends flowers on Joyce's birthday. But getting back to him as an artist, he reflects the bel canto tradition of Italian singing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Tony's voice, you can hear that sob, that tear, that cry, that's so much a part of what makes opera great. And you hear it in the great tenors' voices. You can hear it in Tony's voice, and he's brought it to the Great American Songbook.
Well, we've talked on this podcast about voice, and there are so many people with beautiful voices walking around the streets of the world, but it's what you then apply to it and the emotion behind it that makes it special. And I just saw a recent clip of Tony singing on his 90th birthday, and I mean, yes, his vocal range might be a little bit shorter than it was 30, 40 years ago, but man, does he have the emotional range and the emotional depth that he always had. It's brilliant, just brilliant.
He can reduce you to tears at any time. How do you keep the music playing? He sang that a few weeks ago when he appeared in Worcester.
Mm-hmm.
The poignancy in his voice now is greater than ever because, you know, he's 90 years old. He'll be 91. And you know, he continues to thrive on that wonderful feedback he gets. And he has a love affair with the audience every time he walks out, you know, standing ovations, even before he sings.
And the guys he's had with him, backing him up, one of whom I know, Marshall Wood on bass, and you probably know all of them pretty well. You can tell there's a family there. There's a love between him and such a synchronicity between him and the backup guys.
Gray Sargent, his guitarist,
right,
who's been with him for years, told me that every night that they play for Tony, it's different. He never sings the same song. Same way. Like forget even the old ones like Rags to Riches, Because of You.
Yeah.
Stranger in Paradise. Stranger in Paradise is really an aria, you know, when he sings that. He's one of the great artists of our time, and the longevity of his career will probably never be surpassed.
Talking with Ron Della Chiesa, Boston celebrity, actually a national celebrity, because just recently, one of your recent projects was to work with the Boston Pops and Bloomberg, the network that thankfully came in to support the 4th of July. And what was your voiceover job? What was your work entailing with that?
We did two shows on Bloomberg Radio. Monday, as a prelude to the concert, we went around from 4 to 8, having a lot of the guests on and talking with people who make it happen at the Esplanade. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like a Cecil B. DeMille epic down there.
It sure is. I know very
And then
well.
We did Tuesday again as a whole prelude to the 4th. And then I did the voiceover for the opening of the show on Bloomberg TV.
I was so excited, Ron. I was on a balcony on Beacon Street in Boston overlooking the Charles River. And I heard you through the loudspeakers. And I said, wow, that's Ron. And he sounds great. And that's another example of the use of voice. And I know there were thousands of people who recognized you, which must make you feel pretty good. That was fun. That was a fun gig.
I enjoyed it. And, you know, Bloomberg has it now. They've signed a 3-year contract. And we had some great guests on with us. We had Peter Fiedler, of course, the son of Arthur Fiedler. Mm-hmm. We had Brian Stokes Mitchell. We had the wonderful singer who sings in Hamilton. What's his name? Odom.
Odom
was there.
Yes.
Melissa Etheridge, Andy Grammer. Yep. And, of course, very patriotic. There was a very patriotic feel to this year's concerts. Mm-hmm. They did a wonderful medley with the U.S. Army Field Band chorus. It was just goosebumps all the way, you know?
Well, we've been talking a lot about the emotional impact of the voice. And I want to now invite you to talk about something that just happened in a broadcast. You were telling me very recently at Tanglewood where you hang out and do your work brilliantly every summer, and I can't wait to see you later in the summer, that there was a piece played by the BSO, Mahler Symphony No. 4, and just we're going to play a little bit of this now, one of the movements. Why was this movement so special to you?
Back in the early 50s, my father, who served in World War II as a lieutenant colonel in the Quartermaster Corps, had a job. I don't know how he could do it. It was Graves Registration, just saying that, you know. When he came back from World War II, he was an artist. He loved music. He suffered a nervous breakdown, went into the VA hospital. And my mother and I would visit him, and he would just be away in a corner, wouldn't talk to anybody, went through shock therapy, insulin, and wept a lot. But when he came out of that, it was his painting and his art and his love for music and opera and classical music that brought him back. So we went to Symphony Hall to hear a performance of this very symphony that was one of the works that opened Tanglewood last weekend, the Mahler Symphony No. 4. I had never heard it. He had never heard it. Mahler himself described the third movement of this symphony, the Adagio, as the favorite of all his slow movements. We got through the first part of the symphony, which is a long movement, about 22 minutes. Then Mahler requests that there be a pause of 5 minutes in between, and then is the Adagio, which comes up later. And I looked over at my father during the Adagio, and he just had his head down, and the tears were just flowing, and he was sobbing to himself. And I realized the power and the effect that music can have on us. So this past weekend, when it happened on the broadcast with Andres Nelsons and his wife, Christina Opalais, who sang in the last movement, when we got to the Adagio, I mean, I realized I was going to have a hard time getting through this. And I did. I wept. Fortunately, the symphony ends in it very triumphant, very quietly and tranquilly, and I was able to get through it. But it shows you how music's had such an impact on us, you know, and a piece that I'll never forget.
Reading a book by Mitch Albom. It's called The Magic Strings of Frankie Presto. But it's all about that. Music in the book is a character describing what music does for people, for humanity. And I think that's what you just summed up beautifully there. And by the way, the audience knows when you're feeling it.
Absolutely.
And they're with you.
Yeah, they're with me. And I try to bring that intimacy into it. You know, if it's a very, very triumphant ending, my voice soars up a bit. If it's a tranquil ending, I get very sotto voce, as we say in Italian. Mm-hmm. And I try to have that feeling whenever I hear something like that that comes across the airwaves, so that the listener feels it along with me. Nostalgia is what a word. You could spend many years defining it. But one of the best definitions I heard was on Mad Men, when they're doing a presentation with a slide projector. Do you remember that?
Oh, God, yes. One of the great scenes.
Yeah, and all of these images are coming up, and you hear the projector one way. Mm. And he says, the lead character,
Don Draper
says, nostalgia. How do we define nostalgia? Some think it's a pain in the heart for things we love most in the past. What a great definition. Mm. Jess Kane had another one. He quoted S.J. Perlman. He said, lay off the nostalgia. It can be deadly.
S.J. Perlman was great.
Right. But it is interesting, isn't it, how we reflect back a lot.
And moments in your life, professional moments in a broadcaster's life or in a voiceover person's life, you remember where you were when you first heard something or recorded something. I remember doing a version of the Declaration of Independence, just reading the Declaration of Independence to music for the 4th of July years ago on BZ, and we played it several years in a row, and people would comment on it, the emotion, and I didn't even think about it at the time. I tried to instill emotion in those old words from 1776. And that's the thing. It's a magical thing. We really can't put our finger on where it comes from, except that it comes from inside and maybe up above.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that you've been able to use that voice of yours to guide us through music, whether it be jazz or classical or Sinatra.
And there's many things that we've done and you've done too that are part of that Carnival of the Animals, Saint-Saëns. It's a wonderful narration.
Right, right.
Lincoln Portrait, Aaron Copland.
Yeah, I've done that. And I've also done, and I'm sure you've done all of them, Peter and the Wolf.
Peter and the Wolf, yeah. Or as Duke Ellington said, Peter is a wolf. You know, Duke recorded that in a very jazzy way, Nutcracker.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's so many of them. Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra.
Yeah. Oh, yes. That's a terrific one. And 'Twas the Night Before and all that kind of good stuff. I think the respect that you have for symphonic music really is impressive because you've lived through it and lived with it and you're there. So you know what these orchestras, these conductors, these music arrangers are going through. And the music arrangers for, say, the Pops are some of the most incredibly genius people I know to create these new arrangements of things we've heard a million times.
Absolutely. You know, Dennis Alves, of course, who's the man behind the Pops, the artistic director, he told me there are 5,000 arrangements that Keith Lockhart has access to in the Boston Pops Library. But you're right. You know, Leroy Anderson, of course, Arthur Fiedler put him on the Mac. John Williams. What can you say about John Williams? Oh. I mean, there's not a country or a person anywhere that doesn't know John Williams' music. Think about it.
And you've talked with John. He's one of the most humble people on planet Earth, isn't he?
He really is. He likes to talk about things away from movies. He likes to talk about his years as Johnny Williams, the jazz pianist out in Hollywood.
Right, right.
Playing with Shorty Rogers and all the guys in the Kenton Orchestra in those days when he was playing jazz piano. Getting back to my respect for the opera singers, I once was at a master class that Carlo Bergonzi conducted. He was one of the great tenors out of the Pavarotti era, a little bit before Pavarotti. And he worked with a young woman who was singing an aria from Puccini's La Bohème and Mi chiamano Mimi. And he started at the beginning, and then he phrased it with her. He sang it back to her. By the end of that session, she sang a completely different. She was a different person. A different voice came out of her.
Amazing.
You enjoy opera. I know you do.
I do now. Yes.
And
I'm a newcomer, but I love it. I love it.
The subtleties in the voice, you know, what they call legato, you know, the sound, you can stretch it out from a piano to a forte back down to a piano. Mm. And he shaped it with his hands and with his voice. And how he told it was like a sculptor molding instead of a piece of clay, molding the human voice.
So in a sense, if you're somebody listening to this, who's never been to an opera that passed over that, check it out because you'll understand what's capable when you're dealing with voice. I mean, it's not just belting out a song. It's feeling the song and feeling the emotion and being a character. I think opera is the toughest thing in the world to do because you're acting and singing.
No question.
Without a microphone.
In different languages.
In different languages.
Italian, exactly. French, Czech, Russian, German.
Yeah.
And you've got to have your act together. When you walk on that stage, that role is already up there. You know, I know singers. Domingo, for example, I think he knows over 125 roles. That's phenomenal. I mean, up there, he could go, say, fly over to Covent Garden in England, and they'd say, Placido, we're doing Parsifal. Okay, I know that. Now, that's a huge role, anything by Wagner. You know, these Wagner singers are in demand all over the world. They're booked like 3, 4, and 5 years ahead
of
time.
Well, the ring cycle alone takes how many days?
It's 16 hours. Four separate operas. You're singing in German over the orchestra. Can you imagine how that must feel? I mean, when they come off the stage, I mean, it takes a while to wind down.
Indeed. Now, Ronnie, it wouldn't be fair for us to do any of this without suggesting that not only do you mimic other people, but you are probably, in my estimation, one of the most fun guys to imitate, because your voice is just like, it's like pesto sauce. It's beautiful, man. It's beautiful. But it's not the voice. I'm going to do a little of you. Okay?
See, I knew you'd do that, and I love that. I mean, can I introduce you?
Absolutely.
Well, here's my good friend, the voice of the Boston Symphony, Ron Delachiese.
It's great to be here and to be with you at Jordan. And I really, man, I dig it. I dig it. I dig it. The thing about you that I've always think about imitating anyone is you play off someone's characteristics and you exaggerate them. So I always used to say when I did Ron in front of anybody, I would say, Ron is a lover of Italian food, as I am. Loves Italian food. So just imagine Ron has just finished a big meal at the North End, and he hasn't quite digested it yet, so he's still enjoying and savoring the meal, man. And it's, yeah, it's great, man. But you've got that warmth and that sincerity in your voice, that just, that smile that comes out is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I think a lot of that, too, breaking me up is the fact that I hung around with a lot of jazz musicians.
Yeah, man.
And, you know, Dizzy Gillespie, maybe, you know, it's beautiful. You're beautiful. I dig your shoes, man. Yeah, it's great, man. Yeah, we're going to blow away, man.
That's right.
We're going to blow away.
That's right.
My voice, you know, man, is like the way I play. I play bebop with Charlie Parker, you know. So I think that you get that, too. You know,
I get voice. That. And I've been getting it from you for the longest time. But The beautiful part of this story is that you are as busy as ever, you're in demand more than ever, and you are still reigning high as the go-to guy when it comes to what you do. What advice, I asked this of all my guests, what advice do you have for up-and-coming either radio or television or voiceover artists or actors in general or singers? What advice do you have in general? If you could
physically, you've got to stay in good shape. You've got to exercise the voice every day. As I said, my way is out walking with my headsets and humming along to opera or jazz, keeping it flowing. You've got to handle rejection very well. If you go into a studio over and over again and say, no, you're not quite the voice we want, but we'll call you back. You've got to have a good sense of humor,
yes.
Like you just said, you know. you've got to have a lot of fun. You've got to love what you're doing, and you've got to be tenacious.
Yeah.
Like a pit bull. You just hang in there, and sooner or later, that one break, that door will open, and things will happen.
I'll add one thing that you didn't say that is you, and you're too humble to say this. You also, it helps a lot to be a sincerely, wonderfully kind person, which is who you are. You won't find anyone, folks, who has anything ill to say about Ron Delachiese in any form through business or recreation or whatever. I mean, it's just who you are. And I think you go through life doing what you love, as you said at the beginning, but you also make other people feel special. I think that's what adds to your success.
What you mentioned, In Demand,
yes. Is
a famous story about Richard Strauss, who wrote so many great operas, Salome, Elektra, Rosenkavalier, great symphonies, you know, and he got into a cab, I think somewhere in Germany, and things were happening to him and great critical acclaim. And the cab driver says, oh, Maestro Strauss, I'm so happy to have you in my cab. Where can I take you? And Strauss said, you can take me anywhere. I'm in demand all over. Isn't that a great story?
Wherever the GPS leads at this point, right?
Yeah, go. Exactly.
That is a great story.
But, you know, there's a lot of humor, too, that's there and been written about. You know, there's a book called Opera's Great Disasters. There's a group about the humor in opera. So, you know, it's not all solemn. It's upbeat.
I've loved the comedies and the ups and downs. Let me just mention in closing then that you have a book. It's wonderful. I was thrilled to be at your book launch. Tell us the title and what people can expect.
Well, it's Radio My Way, and you had a lot to do with this book. Jordan Rich put me in touch with an incredibly talented woman, Erica Forensic. She's tall, she's lovely, and man, can she write.
She's a writer.
And she's got another hit mystery novel out there. It's called The River at Night.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I met Erica. We bonded right away because I needed somebody to help me through the narrative process. And also, I had all of these hundreds and hundreds of interviews, which we distilled down to about 45. I sat down with Erica for several weeks, and she captured my voice. She captured what I'm all about. And the book is called Radio My Way, celebrating my 50 years of radio. And I had a ball with writing it with her, and it's available through Amazon.com.
Yeah, and the pictures alone are worth the price because you had, thankfully, photographs with so many celebrities and so many great moments and so many nice family moments, too. Joycey's in the book, and, it's just great. So yeah, congratulations. Great.
Thank you.
So thank you, man, for sitting down with me today, man.
It's a pleasure,
it's great, man. Yeah, yeah. No, but I love you dearly, and I know many of our listeners who – No, you do, but now new fans will discover you. Thank you, Ron, for being here.
Thank you, Jordan. It's always a pleasure.
You've been listening to On Mic with me, Jordan Rich, a podcast produced and hosted by Chart Productions. Find us on the web at www.chartproductions.com. Thanks for listening to this podcast, and I'll end this one with Ron's sign-off. Peace.